The International Criminal Court last Friday issued arrest warrants for Russia's President Vladimir Putin, along with the Russian Federation's Children's Commissioner. The ICC war crimes charges are a response to the deportation of thousands of Ukrainian children to Russia. Here's ICC President Pyotr Hofmanskiy in a video statement.
It is forbidden by international law for occupying powers to transfer civilians from the territory they live in to other territories. Children enjoy special protection under the Geneva Convention.
We're going to talk about the charges and whether Putin could actually be arrested. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this move by the International Criminal Court about how war crime charges are brought and prosecuted? How do you want to see the international community respond? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Berlin is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University, where he studies international law, torture, and atrocity justice. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It was just about a year ago, Mark, that we talked to you about U.S. calls for war crimes charges against Putin. Here we are. We have at least one from the International Criminal Court. What do you make of the release of this warrant and the particular charges made here?
Well, as the clip indicated, the charges relate to unlawful deportation of population outside of Ukraine and the unlawful transfer of a population from an unoccupied territory. Both are war crimes. This is a major milestone in the history of international criminal justice, it has to be said. This is the first time that a government official from a major superpower has been indicted by an international criminal court. And the first time in, let alone a president or a prime minister. And it's the first time in the International Criminal Court's 20-year history that it's indicted someone who's not an African. So historically, it's a major development. I have to be clear at the beginning here that there is basically no chance of President Putin being arrested and transferred to the court anytime soon. The International Criminal Court doesn't have its own police force. It doesn't have its own military. So it depends on the cooperation of individual states, governments, to go out and arrest indicted individuals and transfer them to the court. But that doesn't mean there are no consequences to this move, to this arrest warrant. First of all, it's hugely symbolic importance, I think, for the victims and their families. What's at issue here is the allegations of forcible abduction and transfer of children outside of Ukraine to camps and adoptive families inside of Russia. And so these charges, I think, are hugely meaningful for the victims and their family because it gives a name to the to what they've experienced. It's one thing to be opposed to this program, this policy of abducting children. It's another thing to label it as a war crime, which is something presumably the international community universally condemns. It's also highly stigmatizing for Russia and for Putin in particular. It puts Russia in the same category as other infamous regimes who have also engaged in practices of abducting children and handing them out as spoils of war, spoils of political conflict to their allies. So fascist Spain, Argentina under the military dictatorship, and even leaders of Nazi Germany were prosecuted for similar practices after World War II.
Now we're seeing reports of a variety of war crimes being committed or alleged to have been committed, I should say, by Russian troops in Ukraine against Russian civilians. What makes the difference between, filing charges or looking for charges against an individual, say, soldier, versus saying this is something that the head of the Russian government would be liable for?
Right. So, the International Criminal Court's mission is to prosecute those with the highest responsibility for atrocities. To the extent that that leaders at the top of the Russian government, like Putin, are responsible for this program, then it's the ICC's mission to go all the way to the top. Now, the choice of these particular crimes to single these out is particularly interesting. So I think last time I was on the show, you know, last year, right after the beginning of the war, I talked about how, you know, there's this fundamental challenge to bringing cases, these kinds of cases, that it's fundamentally very difficult to draw a line from an evidence perspective in a court from the responsibility of someone at the top, like a president, to individual soldiers at the you know, on the front lines committing war crimes. And we see a number of cases in the ICC's history of it stumbling or failing to complete cases because it faced problems in establishing this line of responsibility from the top to the bottom. Within that context, these charges, the prosecutor's decision to focus on this particular crime makes a lot of sense, because this is not a crime that's being committed, say, in the fog of war, where the responsibility is ambiguous. You know, the crossing the line from legitimate conduct to a war crime, you know, can be gray. And, you know, it's not clear if, you know, leaders at the top of the government are responsible for the decisions to, say, target civilians. None of that applies in this case, because this is a policy that is conducted out in the open, publicly, proudly. The Russian government has promoted as a humanitarian gesture to relocate these children to Russian families. So all of the issues about who is responsible and, you know, what the facts of the potential crimes are, none of that is really at issue here. It's very clear cut. The Putin government, you know, ratified this policy explicitly, has been promoting it. And so it's not really, you know, the facts and the responsibility are not really questioned here. So it makes sense that the prosecutor here is essentially picking the easiest types of allegations to substantiate in a court, you know, avoiding all of those normal problems that we run into at international criminal courts.
Talking to Mark Berlin, political scientist at Marquette University, looking at international criminal court charges against Vladimir Putin over the removal of civilian children, I guess obviously civilian children, from Ukraine into Russia as part of the unprovoked Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mark, the international court has countries sign on as signatories. Russia is not one of them. Neither is the United States. Does that affect this decision by the ICC?
Yes, it does. So Russia is not a member of the ICC, as you mentioned. So technically, it can say that it's not legally obligated to cooperate with the court on an investigation or, say, arresting and handing over suspects. Other big countries like China also aren't members. So if President Putin travels to China, then China technically is not under an obligation, at least at this point, to arrest him and hand him over. Now, there are 123 member states of the ICC, and they are obligated to arrest anyone who's indicted by the court and hand them over. So, other Russian allies like South Africa and Brazil, who are, you know, member of the so-called BRICS groups, group that has regular diplomatic meetings with Russian government. If Putin travels to one of those countries, like he's supposed to travel to South Africa later in the summer for a BRICS summit, technically the South African government is obligated to arrest him and hand him over to the court. So it'll be interesting to see how Russia handles that if Putin refrains from traveling to South Africa or other ICC member states.
Before we wrap up, Mark, you mentioned China. Now, Xi Jinping, a Chinese leader, visited Moscow. He's there. That's probably been planned for a while, but it happens just after these war crimes charges are filed. Do you see that as significant? If these charges are going to make a pariah out of Putin, well, the Chinese leadership doesn't see it that way.
Absolutely. So China will play a major role in how these allegations play out politically. In theory, these allegations have, and this warrant has, the potential to increase Putin's isolation, make it harder for other countries to cooperate with him or provide him weapons. China's initial actions suggest that they are willing to give him some cover. They have denied the legality of this warrant. And there's ongoing discussions about how much China is going to provide additional weapons to Russia, which Russia really needs. So China's initial actions, you know, suggest they are willing to give him some cover, but they're certainly going to have to take this warrant into consideration now going forward, you know, whether they want to be seen as aiding and abetting an alleged war criminal, which also goes for other potential allies of Russia who might be considering giving them support going forward. And that goes onto the category of, you know, the actual practical consequences of this warrant. Like I said, there's no chance anytime soon Putin will actually be arrested, but there are certain kinds of practical consequences, like difficulties with him, you know, restricting his ability to travel around the world, you know, potential impact on other countries not being willing to, you know, continue to support him or support him at the same level.
Mark, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
That's Mark Berlin, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. We talked to him about the recent arrest warrant the International Criminal Court issued for Vladimir Putin and the Russian Children's Commissioner for the alleged war crime of deporting Ukrainian children to Russia. Coming up, we'll look more at what's been happening with the war in Ukraine with a UW-Russia expert. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this still on your radar after a little more than a year? What questions do you have about the latest in Ukraine and in Russia itself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yoshiko Herrera is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Her research focuses on Russian politics, nationalism, identity, and ethnic politics, and international norms. Yoshiko, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
You've been listening along to the first part of our conversation, Yoshiko. What's your reaction to these International Criminal Court war crimes charges against Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think that the moral condemnation is probably the most important part. I think it also changes a little bit of the calculus for people in the West who may have been willing to cut a deal with Putin or give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it makes that much harder. So I think that it is definitely a victory for some of the victims, because not all the charges have been brought yet, but for those that the charges do affect, that is definitely a moral victory. And I think it does help strategically Ukraine make the case against Russia more broadly.
And then there's this visit, Xi Jinping of China, visiting Putin now. A lot of papers signed involving economic cooperation. How do you see this Chinese state visit as regards Ukraine, though?
I think this visit, to put it bluntly, solidifies Russia's position as a vassal state to China. The agreements are very one-sided. Russia is giving a lot to China in terms of trade, agriculture, IT, et cetera. And there's things we don't even know about yet in terms of military cooperation. And China has offered a very kind of empty sort of peace plan that says, let's just stop the fighting and, you know, hope for the best. So it's not really a peace plan that's likely to amount to anything. China did not offer any kind of serious lethal aid to Russia. They started out the visit by Xi Jinping issuing a statement saying that Russia and China are not in an alliance. So I think that the visit is very obviously one-sided, almost humiliating, in my opinion, for Russia. So I think that there were hopes, certainly on the Russian side, that they would get a lot more out of it, but I don't think that has materialized.
For the Russian people, will they even know about these International Criminal Court charges? Are they going to get the picture of Xi Jinping's visit and the deals made that you just laid out?
Well, the International Criminal Court is not held in high esteem in Russia. It's an international institution that Russia is not a party to, does not respect. And Putin's visit to Mariupol and to Crimea over the weekend kind of underscores his contempt actually for that judgment. So I don't think the conviction in Russia is very meaningful, except for, of course, people in the opposition. You know, it's something they would applaud, but everybody understands that Putin is very unlikely to be arrested, unlikely to travel to a country that would arrest him. So I don't think internally it makes a big difference. Putin may be trying to put a brave face on this by saying, like, well, it doesn't matter that we've cut off all relations with the West and we're never going to have a good relationship with Europe again. Look, we have this relationship with China. But I don't think that that is actually a very popular position in Russia, because I don't think a lot of people in Russia are saying, great, we've always wanted to move to China and have that be the only country we can travel to. So, you know, he's trying to portray it as this relationship with China is, you know, a great victory and is a kind of a substitute for being part of Europe. But I don't actually think that's very popular.
And one concern, I think, on the Russian side is, are they going to have enough ammunition and shells to maintain the war in Ukraine? Is there any indication that some of that will flow from China?
Yes, there's already reports that, well, there are definitely reports that Russia is running out of ammunition. And actually, ammunition is a concern on the Ukrainian side as well. And there are reports that China is aiding Russia's war effort in different ways, in terms of drones, in terms of microchips, other kinds of technology. You don't get the sense of these game changers like the HIMARS or something like that. So it doesn't look like China is offering, you know, really important military assistance, but they may be offering ammunition in various ways. There are reports that Russia was getting ammunition from North Korea as well. So it's possible that they, and there were, I heard a report this morning that they're getting guns from China. So they might be getting some supplies and their war effort is being aided in some ways by China, but I don't think in a very dramatic fashion, and certainly not in what Putin and his people might have hoped for in this meeting.
Talking to UW-Madison political scientist Yoshiko Herrera about the latest news from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yoshiko, turning inside Ukraine's borders now, the war seems to be a stalemate in the active front lines in the regions that Russia technically claimed to have annexed now. What are you looking at there?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of focus on Bakhmut, of course. Many people have said this is not actually a strategically important city, but it's become symbolically important. It's something that Russia really wants to win. This Wagner group in Russia really wants to show a victory there. And the Ukrainians have been able to hold out for quite a long time. And so it's kind of become important to Ukraine symbolically, even though it's not strategically that important. I think the biggest thing is that there were great fears of a spring offensive by Russia and what that might bring. And I think a lot of analysts have suggested that that spring offensive has sort of petered out, that it started, they didn't have much to put into it, and there's not much more coming. Now, there may be some kind of Ukrainian response, which is able to make a significant change in the battle lines and the front line, but we haven't yet seen that. So I guess I'm sort of waiting to see what the Ukrainian response is and what they might have in store. We know that there's more weapons and munitions coming, so there may be something. But I think right now both sides seem to be dug in, and analysts are kind of waiting to see what will happen.
When it comes to an end to the war, and we've talked about this in the past, Yoshiko, Russia wants pieces of Ukraine that Ukraine understandably doesn't want to give up. So negotiations don't seem likely to be successful. The possibility of a decisive victory by either side doesn't look like it's anywhere near. So what does that mean? Just long-term protracted conflict?
Well, I think that both sides at this very moment are committed to fighting. I think the International Criminal Court judgment just emphasizes one of the reasons why Ukraine is so committed, which is that they know that Russia is committing atrocities against Ukrainian citizens in the areas that it occupies. And so it's really important from a humanitarian perspective for Ukraine to retake those areas. It's not just a matter of territory, but it's a matter of coming to the rescue of their citizens in those areas. So both sides are very committed to fighting. It doesn't look like right now either side has the ability to win the war very quickly. But I think that there could be some changes coming this spring and summer with more supplies to Ukraine from the West. I think that's one of the reasons that Ukrainian officials and other supporters of Ukraine have tried to make the case that it's really important to get Ukraine the weapons it needs to win this war as quickly as possible.
And turning back inside Russia's borders now, Yoshiko, I mean, Russia was not known, I think, as a haven for free speech before all of this. Now we're seeing reports of people, you know, dragged out of bars for saying something disparaging about the war effort, a new law saying, yeah, it's illegal to criticize that Wagner group you were talking to. What effect is this having on the Russian people?
Well, for a lot of Putin supporters, it doesn't have any effect because they weren't planning on criticizing the regime. But for people who just want to talk about reality, for example, that just want to say there is a war going on, that's now a crime. You cannot use the word war. You can't say anything disparaging of the armed services or private military companies. So I think you're getting into an Orwellian situation where you're not allowed to say things that are obviously true. I think that people understand that Russia has moved further and further authoritarian, even more so than it already was since this war began, and that Putin is really maintaining his grip on power through the use of force and fear to keep people from the population from resisting his rule.
Yoshiko, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Yoshiko Herrera, professor of political science at UW-Madison. We talked to her today about some of the latest news in the ongoing war in Ukraine.